Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 64 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about a range of free resources that we have available to help you with growing and improving your education business in the new year, 2017. Before we do that, though, we want to be sure to thank Your Membership, which is the sponsor of the Leading Learning Podcast for the first quarter of 2017. Your Membership's award-winning learning management system, Crowd Wisdom, provides organizations with the means to manage all of their educational content formats in one central location and also provides tools to create and deliver assessments, evaluations, and learning communities. You can find out more about Your Membership at yourmembership.com. So, Jeff, about these resources that we have.
Yeah, well, you know, we're heading into a new year here, and this is the time for thinking and planning and for organizations to, you know, possibly have new budgets in place, and stuff is going to start happening. And, you know, over the years that that we've been in business and worked with organizations in the business of lifelong learning, we've created a range of resources from, you know, different tools, kind of thinking tools that organizations can use to reports to, you know, our ongoing newsletters and webinars and those sorts of things. And so we thought it'd be good to kind of corral all of those into a good accessible place that organizations can get hold of and use as needed, both now and then throughout the year. And we've put together a document to do just that. And, you know, as part of this episode, you can go to the show notes, leadinglearning.com episode 64, leadinglearning.com/episode64, and download the resources document, which will have just a wealth of different, again, you know, tools and articles and other sorts of resources that can really help you in thinking about where you can take your education business in 2017 and, you know, how to grow it and how to improve it. But we thought as part of this podcast, we'd highlight, you know, some of those key tools, kind of call them out to make sure that folks are aware of them and talk a little bit about, you know, what they are and how they can be used.
Yeah, because some of them are quite good, if we do say so ourselves.
We do. And you know, the price is right. These are all free
right.
tools here. So you're getting access to, you know, our wealth of knowledge that we've accumulated over the years.
So first, we want to talk about three resources that we kind of group into kind of a tools, models, frameworks bucket. And these are different visuals and processes that can really help focus your thinking and organize your thinking about what you're doing with your learning business. And so I think first and foremost is really one of our newest resources. It's the Learning Business Maturity Model.
Yeah, and we've done a full episode on this, so, you know, we won't belabor it here. But, you know, we do want to just highlight that it's a framework, really, for, you know, assessing the maturity of your learning and education business across five domains and then determining, you know, where to focus your efforts going forward. And so those domains are leadership, strategy, capacity, portfolio, and marketing. And we go into those in much more detail in the documentation that we provide around the maturity model. But then, you know, those span what we see as four stages of maturity.
Right. And so the first stage is what we describe as static. And so in that case, you know, you don't have usually very strong leadership. You may not have a very clear strategy. Capacity may be hampered. Maybe you don't quite have all the the resources that you need in terms of either staff or technology. Your portfolio might be a little bit weak too in terms of not well diversified and really not necessarily very thoughtful. And then of course the marketing can be lagging there too. So at that beginning stage one static, it really is kind of just a kind of doing things that you've always done before without a whole lot of forethought into it. And then it proceeds from that stage one static into stage two reactive, where you get a little bit more active and thoughtful about how things are being handled. But again, it's still largely reactive as opposed to being proactive, which is what happens in stage three. So really beginning to sort of set a vision and a course for the learning business and pursuing that. And then stage four is what we characterize as innovative. And that really is then where you are hitting on all those cylinders in terms of those five domains of leadership, strategy, capacity, portfolio, and marketing. And this is where you really are leading learning at that point.
And so we do, we lay all of this out in a very nice visual, if I can pronounce that right, a visual that is a great discussion piece to, you know, project up and talk through with your team. We provide explanation around these different stages and the different domains that we talk about. And then we also provide an assessment that you can take. So you can go through and find out, you know, where you rate across those domains and how it places you across those stages. So learning maturity model, great place to start at the beginning of the year to sit down and say, okay, let's assess ourselves with this, because that's really going to give you some direction on where to go from there.
So the second resource that we'll highlight in this kind of first bucket of models and frameworks and processes is the value ramp. And the value ramp is a tool that we've been using for a number of years at this point. And so it's older than the maturity model, but it's much simpler. Now, the fact that it's simpler than the maturity model doesn't mean that it's any less powerful.
Yeah, it's an amazingly powerful tool. And, you know, I just referred to the maturity model as kind of a discussion document, something you can kind of put up there and have some good conversation around. The value ramp is just incredibly, well, valuable for doing this. And the idea with the value ramp is that there is a correlation between price and value, so that, you know, as you provide more value in your portfolio, you ought to be able to charge more. And, of course, as you charge more, you ought to be providing more value. And it's a simple curve. You know, you have two axes, one axis that represents price, one that represents value, and you draw a curve sloping from the bottom left up to the upper right. And you talk about, you know, where your products or potential products fall along that curve or ramp. You know, that's where we get the ramp analogy from with the value ramp. And then the idea is, you know, at the lower left-hand side of that ramp, you know, you should be providing value, but, you know, the way the market works these days is you have to start providing value and demonstrating your value before you're ever charging anything. So you'll have sort of a flat line along the bottom left of that value ramp. And then you start to arc up. You start to provide more value. You start to provide you start to charge more for that value that you're providing. And the idea is to, you know, to plot out your portfolio of products. It may be a specific focus area within your business. So, you know, the grouping of online products that you're providing, for example, and plot out how the value changes. Or it may be that you plot out your entire learning business there. And at the bottom left, you may have things like, for example, your social media efforts, your blog posts and your articles that you're putting out there. And then you move into some of your, you know, more introductory and basic educational offerings. And then perhaps into, you know, some of your higher value stuff like your meetings and events. But, you know, thinking that, you know, ultimately you want to provide some very, very high value at the top end of that value ramp. And this may be, you know, very customized, highly personalized type engagements with your audience. And, you know, what we often find in working with organizations is that when you look at that value ramp and you plot out sort of where their learning and education products fall on that ramp, they tend to have a lot in the middle, a sort of, you know, kind of medium price, medium value type products. They're not doing a lot in the lower left to provide, you know, low price or no price products to demonstrate value, and they often don't have anything at the upper right for, you know, where they're really providing very, very high and unique value that can only be gotten from their organization and charging appropriately for it. So, you know, and this is just you know, two axes and a curve, mm-hmm. And you can get this kind of discussion out of it and really flesh out your whole portfolio and your whole product strategy using something like the value ramp.
Right, and I think one thing to emphasize with the value ramp too is this idea of building momentum, and you sort of talked about that, you know, kind of flat line in the lower lower left as you're offering things for free, but they're still valuable. And I think what can happen in too many organizations is you forget this idea of really what you're trying to do is kind of drive people along that curve. And if you go from one price point to a much higher price point, it's going to be harder for people to sort of accept that. Whereas if you're kind of increasing value and increasing price, all along the way, it's going to be kind of an easier ride for your member, for your learner to make that leap and to then get to that highest value that you offer that also probably comes with that highest price tag.
So again, this is another free tool. We've got a couple of articles and some videos on this. We've also got a downloadable value ramp document that kind of maps it out for you. And again, you can project this up on a screen, or you don't even have to project it. All you need is a whiteboard or a flip chart and, draw the thing up there and start talking about it and start filling it in. It can be a very interactive type tool to use. So that's the second tool, the value ramp. The first one, again, was the learning business maturity model. And then the third tool we wanted to talk about is something we call the market insight matrix. And this is a great one to mention at the beginning of the year, too, because it's really about a process for understanding and assessing your market for continuing education and professional development. And it's the kind of thing that, you need to put into place and then engage with over time.
And the matrix uses has two axes, and it's the idea that there are three stages of market assessment and that there are then three types of market assessment activities. And so the three stages are idea generation, then idea verification, and then idea testing. So with idea generation, this is where you're coming up with what is it that's going to best suit your market and best serve your market. And at this point, you're going to be looking for diverse input to really come up with, okay, what are the new products for the appropriate audiences that we serve? And then you're going to move into idea verification once you have some of those ideas. This is, how do you actually determine whether the ideas that you've generated in that previous stage really do have value, do seem to be something that your learners and your members would respond to. And then idea testing. So once you've generated the idea, once you've gotten some verification and you've actually begun to develop some of that product, how do you test it? So this is, where you might be looking at something like a minimum viable product or putting together a pilot where you can really test it and get some direct feedback from the market on a product that you're putting out there.
And then, like you said, there are three types of activities that go on within each of these stages of market assessment. So you'll be tracking, which means, you'll be looking at your kind of historical quantitative data, things like, your analytics, your web analytics using something like Google Analytics, things that have happened in your e-commerce records or your learning management system records. So tracking that and seeing what it tells you in each of these stages. You'll be doing what we call listening, which is, observing what your members and customers are saying and doing. And there's so many ways to do that online now, by paying attention to social media, by paying attention to recommendations and reviews that get submitted, by looking at discussion boards. I mean, just all sorts of things. So this whole concept of listening is really powerful now. And you can learn just so much just by kind of watching your market in action. And then finally, asking. So you track, you listen, and then you very strategically ask. So you're going to go out and, request input on specific questions. This is kind of, traditional surveying and focus group type stuff. But it also includes things like pre-selling. Actually getting on the phone or sitting in the office with somebody, with that educational concept you have. And once you're in that testing stage, are you actually able to pre-sell it? Will they sign up and say, yeah, we want, 100 seats of that if you make it? That's the asking component of this. So you've got your idea generation, idea verification, idea testing, and then within each of those, tracking, listening, and asking. And again, we lay this out in a nice document. It's a sheet that you can kind of fill out and determine what your activities are going to be within the market insight matrix. And this becomes a tool for ongoing discussion. Certainly it can be a very, thought-provoking initial discussion as you nail down the types of activities you're going to engage in those different stages. But then that becomes something that as you meet on a monthly or quarterly basis, whatever the regularity is, you can go back and say, okay, what have we learned in each of these parts of the market insight matrix. And again, you'll be able to get the link to this easily by going to the show notes for the episode at leadinglearning.com/episode64.
And so I'll just add too that you mentioned, Jeff, that often when we look at what organizations do with the value ramp, when they sit there and lay it out and they sort of have, you know, a cluster kind of in the mid-range, and that tends to be something we see. I think with the market insight matrix, one of the things that this format can really get organizations to do is to really make sure that they're not just relying on asking or not just relying on the listening or not just relying on the tracking. I think too often organizations can kind of come to rely on, okay, we're going to be, you know, analytics focused. We're going to really look at the data that we have and mine that. And they forget to kind of go out and do some listening to the market in terms of like what people are saying on, you know, on social media or in other places that might give them valuable insight into key issues. So, and you mentioned too, Jeff, that the market insight matrix is something that you can revisit. All three of these tools that we've talked about so far all really well lend themselves to that initial use, yes, but then of course revisiting periodically.
Yeah, I mean, they're a great way to organize your thoughts in the first place and then to stay organized and to stay focused as you go on. So, you know, again, very, very powerful things to be engaging with at the beginning of a year when often so many things are starting up. And as we know, oftentimes we have, you know, the best intentions and the best plans at the beginning of a year. These will help you to carry those plans through.
So the second area or kind of bucket of resources that we wanted to talk about is our reports. And so we have three major reports that we would like to highlight. These are all based on surveys of associations. So we go out and do a web-based survey behind it. And then we delve into the data and look at what it has to say. And then we also usually often end up talking to organizations or professionals in learning businesses to find out, you know, to add a little color to the data, to find out what they're up to. And usually that also makes its way into these reports. So the first one is the Association Learning Plus Technology Report. And it really is just kind of a comprehensive look at the use of technology to enhance and enable education and learning among associations or, you know, in terms of their learning business and what they're doing. And so it's a very helpful resource for leaders who want to be really fully informed about kind of what others are doing and what's happening in the market and as they're thinking about launching or growing new education initiatives.
And if I remember correctly, I think this is the kind of oldest of our, at least our survey-based reports. I mean, we've been doing this for many years, and we used to call it, did we call it the Association E-Learning Report originally or something along those lines?
We did, yes.
Yeah, but a few years ago, you know, we felt that learning plus technology was much more appropriate because, you know, it's people have a very, I think, restrictive view of e-learning, and technology interfaces with learning in so many different and very rich ways, and we try to capture that with this report. It's not just about, you know, the sort of self-paced on-demand online courses. It's about all of the ways that that technology and learning can intersect. And like all of our, you know, major reports, this is survey-based. And the most recent round of this, we had 174 qualifying responses. And we found out that, you know, 87.4% of the respondents indicated that they're currently offering technology-enabled or technology-enhanced learning, and then an additional 8.6% of respondents indicated that they plan to start using technology to enable or enhance learning in the coming 12 months. So, I mean, we're at a point now where, you know, technology is just ubiquitous across the learning business. It's something that most organizations are doing, large or small. It's something that learners expect at this point. So we delve into, you know, not just the levels of uses, but then, you know, specific ways in which it's being used. And in the last couple of reports, we've started, you know, asking about emerging types of learning. So things like, you know, massive open online courses, MOOCs, flipped learning, gamified learning, micro-credentials, you know, those sorts of trends that are emerging now, and getting a sense of how organizations are using those, if they are using those. With those five ones, we found that probably not as much as they could or should be at this point. But nonetheless, those are starting to get some traction.
So the second report, and we just recently released a new version of this, is the social learning trends in the association space. And so this is a look at how associations are using social technologies as part of their learning initiatives. So you know, social learning is a very old concept and been around a long time, but, you know, we've seen social media come along and social technologies that have really sort of given a second wind to social learning and kind of a new flavor of social learning here. And so we went out again and surveyed professionals working at associations about their use of social technologies specifically for learning. And really only about a third are not using social technologies for learning. So I think that's pretty interesting, you know. And so then of the ones who are using social technologies, it's a mix. Many are using it informally, but there seems to be a growing number of organizations using it really as part, a formal part of a learning product or a learning service.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's really what we wanted to try to dig into in this survey. We wanted kind of the broad feel for informal usage, but then that more formal, more structured usage, how much is that catching on? How much are, you know, the learning businesses within organizations saying, yes, we are going to consciously incorporate this into our formal learning experiences? And, you know, we ask about how's it being tracked? How are you doing it? You know, the types of questions that you need to be asking if you are going to bring social learning into the learning experiences you're offering. And we provide some brief case studies with this one too. We try to do that with reports whenever we can. So we have a number of case studies about how social learning is being used in the association space. And this is an issue that really every organization should be thinking about and determining what they're going to do to support both informally and formally going forward. So this is a great report to, you know, give you an idea of what's happening and what the possibilities might be out there.
And so then the third report that we want to highlight is Association Virtual Events. And this is, again, a report that we've conducted over a number of years. It's one we return to periodically. We resurvey. We, you know, think about what new questions should be added. And then we, again, as always, then delve into that data, talk with folks, and really think about how it is that associations are making use of virtual events. So, you know, by that we don't mean just kind of the single one-off webinar or even webcast. You know, we're really thinking about things where people are being very thoughtful about putting together a virtual event that really in many ways tries to replicate what might happen at a place-based conference or event.
And in some cases, this might be an extension or an accompaniment to the place-based conference, or it may be a complete standalone event. We ask about both of those. And I'd say, you know, we said earlier that well north of 90% of associations are using technology in their learning initiatives at this point. We've seen the overall growth of virtual events, though, to be, you know, kind of incremental over the years. It was somewhere around the 30% range when we started assessing it a while back, and it hasn't grown tremendously from there. It's, you know, kind of just slowly ratcheting up over time. But I feel like we are hearing a lot more buzz about it lately. We've had a lot more organizations who have tried it out, who have a track record. We do have some case studies in this report as well. And if it is something you're thinking about doing, you know, this report is going to help you think about things like, you know, the timing and the pricing for your virtual events, you know, understanding the level of registration and attendance to expect versus, for example, your place-based events. Talks about the common tools that are used for delivering and supporting virtual events. And it talks about, you know, the mistakes and the benefit that you know, other organizations have gotten, so you're able to learn from what other organizations have done with their virtual events. And probably a good time to mention as an aside too that, you know, we're going to start walking the walk here, and we're going to be doing our own learning technology design event, which we did as a face-to-face event last spring. We're going to be doing that as a virtual event this spring, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we move into some of our other resources. But the virtual events report is the third of the major reports that we have right now. Again, association learning plus technology, the social learning in the association space report, and then association virtual events.
So the last bucket, I should say it's the penultimate bucket, the next to last bucket there.
Such a great word, penultimate, isn't it? Yeah.
Is a technology selection. And, you know, obviously these reports that we've just been talking about, a lot of them get at the use of technology for learning. And we have a variety of resources that even more directly get at the use of technology for learning that really aim to help organizations as they're trying to identify the right platform, the right technology partner to work with them in terms of what they want to achieve with their education business.
That's right. I mean, when we came into the business that we have now, Tagoras, the company that we have, the path into doing what we're doing right now was helping organizations select learning management systems primarily, because we ourselves, not everybody knows this, but we started and grew an online learning company focused on associations. A learning management system was one of our core products, so we have designed and built and deployed learning management systems, and coming into working with trade and professional associations, we already had a huge amount of experience in implementing our solution at trade and professional associations. And so over the years, we've tracked what vendors are out there in the market and come up with a wide range of resources for organizations to use as they bite off the challenge of either, choosing their first major learning platform, major learning technology, or replacing technologies that they already have in place. So, among other things, we maintain a list of vendors who we feel have a good track record and a good focus on working with trade and professional associations. That's not going to be every learning platform out there. I mean, there are north of, I think, 600 learning management systems out there at this point. A small fraction of those are actually appropriate for trade and professional associations, though we have seen that number grow in recent years. But we list those out, the ones that we're tracking. We have interviews with vendors. We're building up more and more interviews. We've got a discussion guide as you're thinking about going out and selecting learning technologies. What should you be asking? What should you be talking about internally? We've got a range of articles on the issues that organizations need to keep in mind when they're selecting platforms. So, all of this pulled together is a nice group of learning platform selection resources, basically. And again, we'll link you to this in the show notes. Just go to leadinglearning.com/episode64.
And so then now we get to the ultimate bucket, the final bucket of resources. And really, these are just a range of kind of ongoing resources that we have. And so first, we have the Leading Learning newsletter. It's an e-newsletter.
That's right. And, I think every company has a newsletter they put out, I guess, and they vary widely in how useful they actually are. You'll have to be the judge, of course, but we put a lot of thought into trying to make this as useful as possible on a monthly basis. And what we do is we go and we curate resources across the major areas with which we engage organizations. So leadership, strategy, learning, technology, marketing, and every issue you get is going to have a link in each of those areas to a resource that's truly useful, truly insightful, or both. And sometimes that's a resource that we've come up with for you. More often than not, though, we're out there just surveying, reading voraciously, and coming up with those curated links that we think it's really going to be worth your while to open up the newsletter and file it away so you can go back and reference it later. I mean, this is truly an ongoing resource. It's not just this showed up in my inbox today. I'll glance over and delete it. No, don't do that. Put it into a folder. Go back to it over time. You will get ongoing value from it.
And we definitely focus on quality over quantity with the newsletter. We really do try to keep it focused and brief. So yeah, each edition really tries to have one resource on one of those major topics, like you were saying, around leadership or strategy. Right. We're not trying to overwhelm. We're really trying to point you to things that we, as you've said, Jeff, find insightful and helpful.
Exactly. And then the next one, in addition to the newsletter comes out monthly with periodic updates in between if we want you to know about something else that's going on. One of the things we might update you about is if we have a webinar coming, because our Leading Learning webinar series is something that we offer throughout the year. And again, we put a lot of effort into determining topics that we know are important to the organizations that we've been working with over the years, that we know are important within the business of lifelong learning. So we've had webinars that have focused on pricing. We've had webinars that have focused on social learning. We mentioned earlier, we've done a webinar on that in the past. We do an annual trends webinar. We just did that, at the end of this year. So we're always trying to focus that webinar content, again, to be as relevant as possible. And these are free. The newsletter's free. Throughout the year, we're going to provide those for you to participate in. And if you register for them, you get the recording for it. If you come to the live webinar session and you need CAE credit for the ASAE credential, you can get that.
And so then we also want to make sure to mention that we have some leading learning events. So both the newsletter is online or, comes to your email inbox, and the webinars are online. But we also have been doing some place-based events and virtual events. As you just mentioned, Jeff, we're going to be holding Learning Technology Design March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. 2017, and that's going to be a virtual event. We'll dedicate 2 days, the first 2 days, March 1st and 2nd, to education and really focusing, our mantra is around trying to be as practical and helpful as possible. So really trying to focus sessions on things like copywriting,
mm-hmm.
focusing things on things like pricing.
Right, yeah, we're going to have a very, very practical guide to pricing and using a specific pricing tool in this round of it. We're going to have Carl Kopp talking about gamification. I mean, Carl pretty much is the leading voice when it comes to gamification and learning. We're going to have Will Tallheimer talking about, better evaluations. We've really just got, it's an incredible lineup that we've got for this particular event. And you can actually, by the time this podcast episode comes out, if it's not up already, it will be very shortly afterwards. The website for the event, ltd.leadinglearning.com, and you'll be able to go there and get all of the information. We'll mention also the last 2 years we have run our Leading Learning Symposium in the fall. We had a great symposium again this past fall in Baltimore. This is where we really bring together, the high-level leaders in the business of lifelong learning and, really intensive peer interaction and discussion along with some, expert thought leaders providing their input as well. We plan to continue that event. We're going to, step back, having done it for 2 years, and maybe, think a little bit about how we approach it differently going forward. But stay tuned for news about the symposium. And you can find out about the past symposia at symposium.leadinglearning.com to get a feeling for what that event is like.
And then the last ongoing resource that we want to highlight is this, the Leading Learning Podcast.
What a wonderful thing it is, the Leading Learning Podcast. And we're now on episode 64. So, week after week for the past couple of years now, we've been cranking out this podcast. And, we've been alternating between you and I having this kind of conversation like we are in this episode, trying to highlight tools and resources, ideas, concepts that, again, we know are going to be valuable to the audience that's listening, but then also interviewing people who are doing interesting things or have, interesting insights or tips and advice to offer to the audience. And we've had some fantastic people on the show. For example, Peter Brown, one of the co-authors of Make It Stick, which is, one of our favorite, we call it an emphatically recommended reading. One of the best books about learning that's out there right now. We had him on the podcast. We had Kelly Palmer, who's the CLO of Degreed.com, which is, really one of the more interesting learning technology companies that's come along recently. And then we had Marlo Weston recently, the CEO of the American Nurses Association, talking about how they're pursuing a grand challenge. You had a great interview with Marla about that. So, we try to really mix it up and find exciting issues, but then also very practically oriented advice and guidance for listeners.
And so with that, as we're exiting, we want to say thanks to your membership for being the sponsor of this episode of the podcast. You can find out more about your membership at yourmembership.com.
To get show notes for this episode, just go to leadinglearning.com/episode64. Again, the nature of this episode is such that you're definitely going to want to go visit those show notes because you're going to be able to download the document that we've put together with all the resources we've mentioned here, links to all of those resources, but also many others. So it's going to be a very rich set of show notes that goes with this episode. And definitely be sure to go check that out, leadinglearning.com/episode64. While you're there, you will also see that there are various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of the podcast and you're not subscribed yet, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe. That sends us a signal that we are, in fact, doing something useful for you in your day-to-day life.
We would also be grateful if you would take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes, and you can do that by going to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. We truly appreciate it. Jeff and I do, and it also makes it much easier for others to find this podcast.
And finally, consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet really easily just by going to leadinglearning.com/share. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, you can pick another social network of your preference and take the language that appears in that tweet that we make so easy for you, or your own language, and send it out to your social networks and tell them to go visit the Leading Learning podcast at leadinglearning.com.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.